There are two messages in the epistle and gospel today, and in the end they are really the same. We hear in the epistle, in the church in Corinth, that there were divisions. If you've read the epistles to the Corinthians, you know this was Paul's troubled community. They gave him a massive headache. After Paul was martyred, we also then have later on an epistle to the Corinthians from Clement of Rome, written about 50 years later, which basically says the same thing to these people. There were still many of the same problems there in the church in Corinth. Thank God it was eventually resolved. And of course, even unto today, there are Christians still in the city of Corinth that have been there for 2,000 years, even with the attempt to decimate those Christians by the Turkish Empire. In the church there were divisions. And Paul points out that these divisions are unnecessary. Some say, I belong to Paul, or I belong to Kepha, or I belong to Apollos. These are the various ministers, the apostles who had been there. They had been serving and raising up the community. Paul had founded it. Apollos came later and watered after Paul planted, as he says. And then Kepha, as far as we know, Peter was never there, but there were some Christians in the church there that were aligning themselves with Peter, possibly a Judaizing faction or something. Hard to know what was going on there. But Paul says, look, was Paul crucified for you? Were you baptized into Paul? He says, no. Jesus Christ died and rose for you. You were baptized into Jesus Christ. And that's to whom you belong. So there should not be these divisions in the community. So what Paul does is he shows that these divisions that are happening within the church in Corinth, which of course for 2,000 years, the church has been plagued by schisms, divisions, heresies, all sorts of problems, often due to personality cults, right? One belongs to one belongs to another. Think of the whole Lutheran church today, right? We have an entire church that is called after a man, Martin Luther. Okay? Talk about a very large personality cult. But Paul says we should focus on Jesus. We should focus on Jesus rather than these things that are causing the divisions, rather than the whatever they may be, and whatever their nature may be. It is Jesus who brings unity as we pray in the Divine Liturgy. This is the same message in the Gospel. Jesus is there on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. This place is well known. There is a church built on the spot. In fact, one of the most ancient Christian mosaics is there in the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves. You have probably seen this famous mosaic of a basket with loaves of bread in it and then the two fish on each side. Have you seen that mosaic? That is the mosaic that is on the floor of the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves, and it's right in front of the bedrock, the stone that's right there where Jesus prayed and multiplied the loaves. You can go there today and still see it. I was just there 2 weeks ago with the bishop. There we prayed for St. Elias and for the Eparchy. And there we broke bread and sang the hymns and remember what Jesus had done on that spot. You may also know tragically that the church has always been persecuted from the first century until today. And just about 2 years ago, Jewish terrorists spray painted that entire church with Hebrew blasphemy, and then tried to burn the place down, one of our most ancient Christian churches. Thank God it only burned down the gift shop and the exterior, and they got the spray paint off the walls eventually. You hear about Islamic terrorists. There are also Israeli terrorists. And who are the victims over and over again? The Christians that you don't hear about in the Holy Land. Those Christians that have been there for 2,000 years fighting these persecutions. In the reading today from the Gospel, we heard about how Jesus had gathered a large crowd to Him. And it was a lonely place. It was evening. It was starting to get late. It is a lonely place today. There's nothing there except a little church. Stone church. It is at least, oh, maybe 3 or 4 miles around the shore to get to Gennesaret, which was a village at that time. And then down to Magdala, another mile or two. And then the other way from this spot to Capernaum, again about 2 miles. Think of a man with his wife and kids sitting there listening to Jesus all day long. There's nothing out there. There's no cities and villages to buy some food. And so the disciples say to Jesus, as it's getting late, hey, send the crowds away. Okay, there's been enough preaching for now, Jesus. Send the crowds away that they may go fulfill their needs. Go, let them go to the villages. All right, it's going to take them about an hour to walk to one of the nearby villages and get some food, find some lodging, and they'll be back after breakfast, Jesus. Let them go get the things they need. And Jesus says to the disciples, there is no need to send them away. You give them what they need. You give them the food they need. They look around at each other. Where are we to get food? How could we give them something that they need? They need food. They need shelter. And Jesus says, you give them the food. So as they wonder how this is going to be, they say to Jesus, what shall we do with them? And he says, do you have any food? And they said, well, we have a couple loaves of bread and some fish, but what is that for so many? A crowd of 5,000 men plus women and children. Okay, so we're in the range of maybe 15,000 people out there in the middle of nowhere. So Jesus says, bring me the bread. Now this miracle happens at the end of Jesus' Galilean ministry. Jesus has been preaching and teaching in that very spot from Gennesaret all the way across the northern shore to Capernaum for 3 years. He has been teaching. He has been healing. They have been receiving all they need, but they haven't perceived it. And so Jesus, at the end of his Galilean ministry, before he leaves Galilee, this is the end. This is the close of his Galilean ministry. He multiplies for them bread. And with the bread that he gives to the disciples, who then give it to the crowds, of course, they are filled. And you can see the imagery of the numbers, as the commentators have pointed out. We have 5,000 men, 5,000 men, 5 loaves. The imagery of Judaism, of course, the Torah. The 12 baskets, again, pointing to the people of Israel. Even the Greek word there, kophinos, was the type of basket the Jews would have used in that region. The imagery is pointing to the fact that Jesus has given them everything they needed. And yet there were 12 baskets left over. And this is why Jesus then gets into the boat with his disciples after the storm. They go to the town of Gennesaret, and he heads off to Lebanon. He goes to Lebanon, into Gentile territory. And when he's in Lebanon, you know the story of the Syrophoenician woman, or the Canaanite woman. It's a local Lebanese lady. Okay, the Gospels describe her in different ways. And you know about the bread that was left over, right? She asked the question, heal my daughter. She says, even the dogs eat the crumbs that are left over from the master's table. Right? Think of those 12 baskets. And so then Jesus gives her what she needs. And then returns to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, Gentile land, where he'd cast out those demons and the swine had gone into the lake. And there among the Gentiles, he multiplies now loaves again for the Gentiles. This is all in preparation for what we're going to talk about next week, and that is the transfiguration of Jesus, which comes as the hinge between the Galilean ministry and his trip to Jerusalem. More on that next week, but I want you to note what has happened in this story. Jesus has provided for his disciples and for those everything they needed. everything they needed. Even the disciples thought, maybe they need to leave Jesus and go into the village. Take a break. Go get the things they need and come back. And Jesus says, no, there is no need to send them away. They have everything they need right here. Not only the spiritual goods, but the material goods. He'll even feed them. Why is this? Because Jesus is the bread of life. Jesus is the bread of life. And He shows us that He will give all that we need. Bread of life, the food of life. Remember, Moses had said that in the book of Deuteronomy, God fed you with manna in the wilderness so that you would know that man does not live by bread alone, the stuff the disciples were interested in going to get in the villages, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That is Jesus. That is Moses talking thousands of years later about the coming of Christ, who is the bread of life for us all. And so we find a very important message here that is the same message in the epistle. Jesus. Are we focused on Jesus in our life? Is Jesus the center of our life? Is our faith in Him the center of our life? Or rather, is our religion something we put on with our Sunday best? Is our faith in Jesus, our relationship with Jesus, is it part of our Sunday clothing? Right? Sunday rolls around and we put on our Sunday best, we put on our nice clothes, we put on our Christian hat, and we go to church. And then when the service is over, making sure it doesn't last too long, we then head back home, take off our Christian outfit, and return to the world. Return to Capernaum. Return to Gennesaret. When we have everything we need right here. That is, in Jesus and in our faith. We often leave the church on Sunday. We often leave our Sunday worship and go back to Capernaum and Gennesaret, seeking bread, seeking shelter, seeking the things of this world. When Jesus has said, everything we need is right here. I don't mean in this building, but I mean what we are doing right now, that is worshiping Jesus. Having a relationship with Jesus. Is Jesus the center of your day on Monday the way He is on Sunday? Is your faith central on Monday as it is on Sunday? Do we spend our life on the shore, even in a lonely place, with Jesus? Or do we spend our life back and forth between the shore with Jesus and Capernaum and Gennesaret? Do we spend our life preparing for eternity? Our days here are very short. Some of you are young, some of you are older, but it really doesn't matter. As you know, people die at whatever age. You hear about someone living over 100. You hear about someone dying in the womb. Our life here on earth is very short compared to eternity. It's like a little candle in the wind that can be blown out like that. The psalmist says that we are like flowers of the field, that let a breath pass over them. That's a wind. Let the wind pass over them and they are gone. How often have you looked out in the springtime and seen beautiful flowers in the field? And suddenly the heat comes out. The dry wind of Morgan Hill or the valley comes shooting down and it's all gone. What happened to those beautiful flowers? They're gone. They've withered and returned to the dust of the earth. And so we are. So are our lives. What are we pursuing in Capernaum and Gennesaret? Why do we run from Jesus after we've heard Him, we've spent time with Him, then we go back to our material lives. No different from maybe our pagan neighbor, our agnostic co-worker, our atheist friend. Are our lives different on Monday through Saturday from those around us? Because I'll tell you what, I hope it's going to be different when Christ returns. I hope your life, I hope my life will be different from the agnostic and the atheist and the pagan when Christ returns. Or will it be the same? Are we preparing for eternity right now? How do you do that? By spending time on the shore with Jesus. Hearing His gospel, that is His good news, His words. Praying, spending time with Him. You do this every day. We do this every day as Christians. We need to do it more. And so I encourage you today, as you hear about the factions that developed in the church there, due to a lack of their focus on Jesus in that church. How the disciples thought it was time to send them away. And Jesus says, no, you have no need to go away. They have no need. Everything they need is right here. Not only the words that Jesus preached and His presence, but He even provided for them there on the shore their material needs. And so in our life, in the workplace, in the neighborhood, wherever we find ourselves, we need to remember not to run to Capernaum and Gennesaret, but rather always remain in every breath we take, however many we have left, with Jesus on the shore. And may we glorify Him every day with His eternal Father, as all holy, good, and life-giving Spirit, both now and ever, and to ages of ages. Amen.